Hey there, it's the Wine Sleuth, and welcome to this edition of my podcast. It's been quite busy here in London. Loads of tastings going on, dinners, lunches, all sorts of exciting things, all sorts of winemakers flying in to show us what they've got. And not long ago, we had some Japanese winemakers in town. And I was able to sit down with a female winemaker, female Japanese winemakers. There's not a lot of them around, but there was one here in town, and we chatted about the Koshu, which is their indigenous variety. So that was quite exciting. And then I also spoke to a Spanish winemaker from Rioja. And it's an old school winery, but I think that Diego, the winemaker, is doing some really exciting things there. And lastly, we had the Wines of Nevada in town as well, which are right next to Rioja, but producing some actually very different wines. And so without much further ado, I think we should start off. I'm going to be starting with the Japanese winemaker from Grace Wines, Ayana Misawa.
Okay, so it's the Wine Sleuth, and I'm here today at the Wines of Koshu, which are wines from Japan. We had a master class earlier tasting these very delicate and very fine wines from, I believe, the center of Japan. And I've gone upstairs, and I've met a lovely young winemaker from Grace Wines, I believe it is. Yes, it's Ayana Misawa, and she is actually the head winemaker. She's taken a few minutes to talk a bit about Grace Wines and really about Koshu. So tell me a little bit more about Koshu.
Okay. Just a small background of our winery. We are the family winery since 1923. And actually, my father is the owner, and he's the fourth generation. We are just next to Tokyo and 100 kilometers to the west from Tokyo. And we are very famous for its Mount Fuji. The vineyards is actually on the foot of Mount Fuji.
Oh, right. So you're situated. So you have do the vines have a view of the mountain?
Yeah, we can see that. Actually, we can see that Mount Fuji from our own estate. Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful.
And how big are your how many hectares do you have?
We have 14 hectares. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you only plant Koshu, or do you have other varieties as well?
We have Koshu and Chardonnay. And for reds, we have Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot, Bordeaux blends. Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. And so you said your father's the fourth generation, so you obviously are the fifth. And so is winemaking, there's a bit of a tradition then in Japan for winemaking?
In our area, it's actually the biggest wine industry in terms of winemaking. Yeah, it's the biggest one. But we have started the winemaking about 120 years ago.
Yeah. Right, 120 years ago. Wow, so you're not like new winemakers.
No, in Asia, it's a shame. Like now in China, everyone knows China making wines, but no one knows Japan making wines.
Yeah, and you guys have been making wine for hundreds of years, really, basically. And so tell me about Koshu, because it's something new to the UK market. Yeah. What is the variety like, and what does it taste like?
I think Koshu is, you know, Japanese indigenous grape variety, and I think it's quite unique flavor. Subtle, delicate, and low in alcohol. So I think it's going to be very interesting for UK markets, because there are trends of wines are getting more, lower alcohol wines.
Yeah, there's a trend from lower alcohol. And what is the average for your wines? What is the average alcohol?
For Koshu, normally 11, from 11 to maximum 12.
Uh-huh, so maximum 12% alcohol. Yeah. Ah, fantastic. And what is the what's the terroir like? I mean, if you're growing grapes in 100 kilometers, you said, west of Tokyo, near the mountain. So is it volcanic soils or?
Actually, it is. We have a volcanic soil, and we have clay. And it depends on the vineyard, actually. And we have vineyards with granite soil, mm-hmm. and yellow clay soil, and a dark gray soil. So,
All right. And so do you taste these wines there? What do you think? For me, they had a lot of finesse, and they were very delicate. What do you think gives them that quality?
I'm not sure.
Is that a trick question?
Yeah, but I think it's Koshu is very pure and very flowery, and I sometimes pick the citrus fruits, like Japanese fruits, like yuzu and mikan, Japanese clementines, mm-hmm. and white peaches and white peas, and always like very,
very fine
fruits I can mm-hmm. pick, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, and so you're a female winemaker,
yeah
obviously.
Yeah.
And, I mean, are there a lot of female winemakers in Japan? You know, the trend, or more and more, we have more and more female winemakers here in the West. And in Japan, are there many female winemakers?
Oh, no. It's changing, but still, I think five or six female winemakers.
And how did you become the winemaker? What were you always in the vineyards as a kid, or?
Yeah, I like the winemaking stuff. My father used to be a winemaker as well, and my grandfather as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, now my brother is selling wines, and I'm making wines. So,
so you got the better job, I think. No. And did you train in Japan, or where did you learn winemaking?
Oh, actually, I got a degree at winemaker in Japan, but I went to Bordeaux University to mm-hmm. study more, and I went to foreign countries, to the Da Vinci's, like Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Argentine.
Argentina. Yeah, wow, Argentina. That must have been very interesting.
Malbec.
Yeah, Malbec, exactly. Wine I don't think you could possibly make in Japan.
No.
All right, and so what do you think, so Koshu, because you've been making wines for so long in Japan, and it's obviously quite well known, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
Why have you come to the UK? What's the purpose? Why are you expanding out of Japan? Do you need to expand, or?
No, just in terms of volume, I don't want to increase all wine volumes of our mm-hmm. wines, because mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil their quality.
Uh-huh, right.
But to me, it's very important to get the outside markets, because we don't have to, because we have a very good market like Tokyo, mm-hmm. so we can sell in Tokyo market. It's a huge market. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think it's very important to see outside markets,
uh-huh.
especially UK. UK is, you know, the center of the wine industry.
Yes. Well, yes, absolutely the center. Might be a few people who disagree, but I agree with you as far as that goes. All right, excellent. So, and are your wines available in the UK now?
Yeah. We have an importer, Horgarten.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Horgarten. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
And so your wines there, we can find them in restaurants, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Normally, we sell for the restaurant. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. Okay. Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat. And I'll definitely be looking for your wines. Are they only in Japanese restaurants, or?
Yeah, Japanese restaurant and French, European style restaurant as mm-hmm. well. Yep.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So I suppose you could have this wine, since it's very light and delicate, maybe as an aperitif.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And actually, Koshu is very food friendly, mm-hmm. maybe feminine friendly as well.
But right. The low alcohol, it's food and family friendly. All right, great.
Food friendly, I think.
Great. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, thank you very much, Ayana. And I'm going to go upstairs and I think try your wines one more time.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Your time. Thank you.
All right, and that was Ayana Misawa, who is the head winemaker for Grace Wine, one of the Japanese wineries that was here in town not long ago, showcasing the Koshu grape. And I remember when Koshu first came to town about 3 years ago. So it's really exciting. It's really great that they're coming back every year, and it proves that Koshu, this low-alcohol white wine, has a market here in the UK. So hopefully we'll be seeing more of a Koshu in the future. All right, next I've got going from the delicate wines of Japan to the big, robust wines of Spain, to Rioja. And I met up with the winemaker of Bodegas Bilbainas not too long ago, Diego Pinilla Navarro, and we were talking about their flagship wine, which is the Reserva Viña Pomol. But also, Diego wanted to talk a bit more about some of the other wines and initiatives that they've got going on at Bodegas Bilbainas, which we did right before dinner at Bistro Duvan in Soho. Okay, so this is the Wine Sleuth, and I'm here today with the winemaker for Viña Pomol, Diego Pinilla Navarro.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, wait, quite close.
Should I try it again? I can put on the Spanish accent. All right, so Diego, so we're here today with your wines. And so you are from Bodegas Bilbaínas, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's one of the oldest, is that one of the oldest wineries in Rioja?
It's one of the centennial wineries. In Rioja must be something like 12 centennial wineries. Mm-hmm. And this is one of these wineries that started the region over 100 years ago.
When was Viña Pomal founded then?
Viña Pomal, Bodegas Bilbaínas, as society was starting in 1901. Viña Pomal as a wine exit to the market in 1908 with a 1904 harvest. So
wow. And so and do you have any of those vines left?
Not the vines, really. The vineyard has been renovated. There are vines that are older than 40 years old, but the vines has always been replanted.
All right, okay. And so so tell me a little bit about what you're doing at Viña Pomal, because I know you have a couple of projects going on there. We were talking about the ecological, I think, project.
Yeah. Under the THACO label, Viña THACO label, we are making organic wine recently. Mm-hmm. The philosophy really is very similar in all the vineyards, but this one particularly is certified that we do all the right treatments. We don't use any chemicals.
So this is what we would call organic then,
yeah,
in English.
Yeah.
All right, so 100% organic. Are you certified now?
We are certified. So
growing grapes.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, because the reality is organic wine, but it's not still regulated in Europe.
Mm-hmm,
so we just can say it's wine made from organic grapes. Okay.
Uh-huh, all right.
And
okay.
This takes about 5 years to certify the vineyard that you are not using any chemical like insecticides or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And after you have to certify yourself as an organic producer.
Uh-huh, all right. And how about in your winemaking? Do you try to be as, I suppose, organic as possible?
Yeah, well, for sure, in this kind of wine, you only use indigenous yeast, very, very low treatments, filtration is very kindly. We nearly don't do any physical or chemical addition in the wine. We try to be as natural as possible.
All right. And how long have you been making the Viña THACO? Is this your first...
In fact, Viña THACO is a very old brand in the winery, coming from the 20s.
Uh-huh.
So the only thing is THACO was a little bit like relaunched 5 years ago, trying to make a style that was a little bit newer, much fruit forward, with trying to show Tempranillo of Rioja Alta, much more a floral expression, easy wine, very... I would say very approachable, but it's very rich also at the same time. This wine is certified organic, but the philosophy under organic is applying all the other wines we make.
So it's
just treat the vines when you need to treat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing in sustainability, and use the right products. When you are certified organic, you cannot use any chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
You need only a few that are allowed for the organic viticulture.
Mm-hmm.
But for the others, we could use chemicals, but we don't either. For example, insecticides we don't use in any of our vineyards because we have big vineyard surfaces, so all together, and we can really handle what we do in the vineyards. The problem is you have neighbors. Usually, it's difficult to apply.
Because
at the end.
Using organic principles.
So it's for that in our own, all our vineyards are based in sustainability, and we
as
try to be
as
close as possible to the organic viticulture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. And so we've had the Viña THACO, and should we try the other? What's the difference? Oh, there's just two different vintages. Is that what it is?
No. This one is organic, one is not.
Oh, right. Okay. So that's what you were talking
this
about.
This is certified organic. This is not.
Uh-huh, so the first one we tried was the non-organic. And so now we're going to try the organic.
Yes.
All right, so let's see if there's a big difference.
The base of winemaking is not so different, and the main difference is very, very little, because the philosophy in the wine is more or less the same. Use of oak, very low treatments. We only treat the wine as the vines when we need to do it. Mm-hmm. We don't like to be all the time adding or filtering or doing treatments that can reduce the quality of the wine. Mm-hmm. So everything is firstly control. We are more in a control in everywhere, in the vine, in the wine. Just make the treatments when we need to do it. Mm-hmm. Or if we don't do it, it's better not to do anything.
Right. Okay, and this is the 2009. This is your latest vintage?
In Zanko, yes. A little bit fresher, a little bit, the fruit is quite present right now. Mm-hmm. Even the wine is still needs some
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it's still tasting, still young, actually.
It's still young,
that's a 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, and so what is the next wine that we have? We have the Vigna Pomar. So tell me a bit about that particular label. So the Zacco was from the 20s, you said, and the Vigna Pomar is...
Well, Vigna Pomar was born in 1908, so it's probably our oldest brand. Mm-hmm. Vigna Pomar philosophy is always very, very linked to Rioja style of wines, so always thinking in more aged wines.
So this one is made in a very traditional style as opposed to the Zacco, which is very modern.
Yeah, yeah. In the traditional ways of aging, use of oak, we still keep a big use of American oak. Quantity of oak is always about 15 to 20% new oak. And we try to be more on the fine, elegant style, so a wine that is long, with a nice acidity, nice balance, a wine that pairs very well with food. We do two styles, Crianza, Reserva, Gran Reserva. The Crianza always want to show more fruit. It's a wine that should be drinking a little bit earlier, okay? I'm more focused in wine that pairs nearly with anything, with any food, and doesn't need a show a special moment to open a bottle, okay?
Right, and then you have the Reserva, and you have the Gran Reserva for the special.
Yeah. For me, the Reserva is kind of a... Well, I would say if we only can taste one wine, it would be this one, okay? Because this one is showing really our vineyards in Aro, so in much more a colder climate, more influenced by the Atlantic, the soil, the argilocarkel we have there.
And are the vines, so for example, the ones you use for Vigna Zacco and the one you use for Vigna Pomar, are they the same general vineyards?
No, well, they are quite close because all our vineyards are very, very close to the winery. We own 250 hectares in Aro, and all that are very, very close to the winery. But the main differences can be about the soil, the soils mainly, more than the climate.
So Vigna Pomar has got the better soil, would you say? Or?
Well, better soil, better exposure, and mainly the wines that go to the Reserva are more in the old bush vines, showing a very nice balance and showing a very nice fruit of Tempranillo with high acidity that help us to age the wine better. And the fruit that goes to Reserva always is something we always are thinking in wines that should be drinking a little bit older, so after 5-6 years at least. Mm-hmm. So the wine always stays about 18 months in barrel for Reservas and will be in the winery 2 or 3 years before we release to the general public. So that, I think, that's the main, that's a good point. I mean, you take a wine from the winery and the wine has been aged already in the winery for 5-6 years.
Right, and I guess that's probably the advantage to Rioja in general.
I think that's the best, the best thing of Rioja is the Reservas aging and how you offer a wine that's ready to drink with 6 years where you can really see a riper wine, a riper fruit, a good evolution. You have see the fruit and the assemblage with the oak and the bottle aging. So very, very important.
Okay, and how long have you been the winemaker for Bodegas Vinos, for all of them?
Yeah, for all of them. I've been for the last 5 years.
5 years. All right. Yeah. Okay. And earlier I was talking, or I heard about the this project you have. It's the Alto de la Caseta. So can you tell me a bit about that? How is that different, and what is...
Well, 2007 was kind of a special year. We start to make a big work. We create like a site of the winery with very small plots, small tanks, making many trials, trying coopers, trying new barrels, trying to split all our plots and look for the best spots. More than a plot, it's kind of even smaller. So we were splitting vineyards that usually were harvested together in different 5-6 vinification, all split it. From some of these spots, we found one that was a little bit special, and this one is a vineyard, a very stony vineyard, very close to a caseta. That means it's a little house where we used to have the agriculture things, and it's on a slope. In fact, it's a southeast orientated slope, so that means it has a very nice sun during the morning, not so much during the afternoon, because this is a very stony, if not, would be too much sun, if you want.
Yeah, okay.
And we found this wine to be quite special, so we decided to make a special wine from this.
And how big is the area, would you say?
The total surface of that vineyard is about 12 hectares, and that can represent 1.5 hectares, more or less. And in fact, we only produce like 8 barrels of this, and bottle only 7. So that's a very, very small amount.
Tiny production.
Yeah.
And do you sell this wine? Is it available in the UK, or is it only available from the...
It's only available in Spain.
Only in Spain.
Right now it's only in Spain. Yeah. In the winery, did
I? So we have to go to the winery to get this one. All right. And the vines, how old are they? How old would you say?
In this wine, it's about 40 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bush vine. It's very, very poor soils. And the balance of the vines is very special. We have to harvest very slowly. We make a big selection of the harvest in the vineyards, a big selection later in the winery, in the selection table, exiting any fruit that can be damaged. And after, everything is like in miniature, okay? Yeah. So very
And do you produce this in the way of a traditional Rioja where it spends...
This one stays nearly 20 months in... It spends 20 months in barrel. And after we exit to the market whenever we think it's ready. It's not under Reserva label, but could be a Reserva wine because it has enough aging to do it. But we think this is a wine. It's more important than the aging is what we express in a vineyard. And also the reality is you have to go to the winery to buy it.
Yeah.
So we are able to explain the wine there because
right.
I think it's a wine that should be a little bit explained of what represents for us, in fact.
Uh-huh. All right, what it represents for Rioja?
For the Rioja, for the winery. This is a little bit the way the winery has been always trying new things and making new things. This is
homage. And how would you say this wine is different then from what sort of separates it or sets it apart?
For the taste profile, I think the minerality that this wine shows is very, very special, and the richness. It's kind of explosion of fruit, at the same time it's very balanced, it has support new oak for a very long time, and it's a wine that expresses many, many things. Mm-hmm. It's really a rich wine.
And then we have one more wine here, which is the Vicalanda. And that's another Reserva, looks like, in Gran Reserva.
Reserva and Gran Reserva. Vicalanda range, this wine, this wine's starting in the 90s. In the 90s in Rioja, there's kind of a revolution changing in the winemaking. We tend to use Tempranillo slightly riper, richer, fruitier.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're starting to use the French oak. In that moment, that's a revolution. Probably if you go now to Rioja, you will see that reflect in many wines.
Right.
But in the 90s, that was kind of a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Vicalanda wants to reflect that. It's coming from soils that are a little bit, help the Tempranillo to ripe earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit richer concentration, more tannin structure. Mm-hmm. And it's only using, in this case, French oak. So that helps also.
So these
to
are 100% French oak.
Yes. It's slightly newer. The idea is to make a different style inside Rioja, but it's a slightly different style of wine.
All right, okay. And what about Rioja in the UK market? How do you see it going?
Well, I think UK is a big country for Rioja. Here, people knows very well about wines. Taste different wines in different parts of the world, and like to drink wine. And people that like to drink wine, I'm sure Tempranillo and Rioja is very easily, it's a wine that is drink very easily. So people are very friendly, approachable, And I think here match very well. Also, really? Most of English people know Spain, so I think that's
make
Rioja. Easier. Yeah, yeah, that makes
and,
easier
and
for
what
us.
Does Viña Pomar, how would you say you stand out from, say, all the other Riojas of, you know?
For us, it's a question of heritage and of what we show in our wines. We are placed in a very, very special area. We've been producing with the same fruit for the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. So we have a big personality coming from our vineyard in Aro. Mm-hmm. That's quite unique. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, differentiates us from other wineries and other expressions.
Yeah. All right, great. Okay, well, thank you very much, Diego, for taking the time. And, well, I can't wait for dinner to see how these wines go.
And that was the chief winemaker for Bodegas Bilbaínas, Diego Pinilla Navarro, talking about the various winemaking initiatives they have there at the winery, doing everything from organics to experimental plots. And I have to say that afterwards at dinner, I did get to try all of the wines that we spoke about, plus a few more as well. And they were very, very impressive and really food-friendly wines as well. I found the Viña Pomar 2006 was showing beautifully and just drinking so well. And the Vicalanda as well, the 2004, really, really good. And as well, we got to try the Alto de la Caseta. Really quite privileged. I think there's only one or possibly two bottles that Diego brought along. But really excellent examples of what's coming out of Rioja. And so now we are still staying in northern Spain. We're going a bit further north to a region that's not as well known as Rioja, but still produces some fantastic wines, often using the same grapes, but they also do international varieties as well. And I'm talking about the wines of Navarra. Navarra has been making wine for... well, probably as long as Rioja, maybe even longer. They do Garnacha and Tempranillo, but they also do modern varieties like Cabernet, Merlot. I think even there was a bit of Petit Verdot in there as well, one of the winemakers told me. And so I went to a tasting not long ago to try their wines. And of course, there was the rosés, which they are most justly famous for. But I also got to try some of the other ones. And I had a chance to speak to Jordi Vidal, who is the Consejo Regulador, so of the DO, and just wanted to find out a little bit more about the wines of Navarra and what they're doing here in the UK.
All right, it's the Wine Sleuth, and I'm here today at the Wines of Navarra tasting, and I'm talking with Jordi Vidal, who is the consul, the official Consejo Regulador of the DO. And so tell me, Jordi, I know that Wines of Navarro, usually if anybody thinks about it in the UK, it's rosés. So what is your aim, or what's the purpose of this new campaign that you've just kicked off here in the UK?
Well, our purpose is to try to help wineries to find more distribution here, to contact on-trade and off-trade professionals in order to get, to widespread our wines, to inform them that I think we produce one of the best rosés in the world, which is now well known because we are specialized in this production, but we produce also very interesting red wines.
Okay, and so can you tell me about the wines of Navarro? Because I just discovered actually today that you're right next to Rioja.
Yes.
And so why do you think that you're not as, say, well-known? Because Rioja, everybody knows Rioja in the UK.
Mm-hmm. We are a smaller appellation. We represent, we are something like the fifth of Rioja. We have around 12,000 hectares. And we are northern of Rioja. You know, Rioja is most of the region is around the Ebro Valley. And our wine region goes from the south of Pamplona to the south of Navarra, which is on the Ebro River bank.
All right. And is the grapes you grow, are they the same as Rioja? Or
no, in fact, we have a deep history because Navarra was a kingdom up to the 16th century, was the last kingdom annexed by the Catholic kings. And we have this strong history that relate a lot Navarra with France. So in fact, we are this mixture of the French influence and the Spanish influence. And that way we have domestic grapes as Grenache and Jura or Tempranillo, but we have also Chardonnay, Cabernet and Merlot, but not from, let's say, from a new wave came on the 80s, but from several centuries been present in Navarra and lost at the beginning of the 20th century with Phylloxera.
All right, so you've actually had, historically, you had Cabernet and Merlot. It's not some sort of international varietal that you sort of just jumped on the bandwagon and said, we're going to plant it.
No, not at all. At the beginning of the 20th century, there was a big viticultural congress in Navarra, and at that time, the scientists and specialists found that, in fact, before Phylloxera, there were something like 80 different grapes grown in Navarra.
Wow.
That means a lot of grapes coming from both sides, because Navarra was during three centuries belonged to the French crown.
All right, so it's a recent Spanish, I suppose, recent part of Spain.
Let's say just for 4 or 5 centuries.
Right.
But so this mixture makes something very special from Navarra. Uh-huh. So you can feel, and also there's another factor which is important is to know that Navarra is very in the north of Spain. Mm-hmm. It's on the Pyrenees. So it has a strong influence from the Atlantic Ocean climate.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So you have the north of the Navarra wine region is pretty much influenced, has this northern
Atlantic influence.
That's right, this northern influence. And that's why grapes as Chardonnay has been so well introduced and has found a nice territory in Navarra.
All right, okay, great. And so what is going to be, I think, your focus for the UK for the next year? What are you trying to, what's the message that you're trying to get out to the average consumer who doesn't really know, other than Rioja, you know, the wines of Navarra are? What would you say?
That I would say that the consumers are going to find always nice wines with this northern style. That means more acidic, less heavy. Than in other parts of Spain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so less fruit forward, I would say. More minerality, possibly.
Mm-hmm. More minerality, more acidity, which always matches very well.
I noticed that, actually, in the wines. There was quite a bit of acidity, really good, really cleansing your mouth.
And also, you will have, the different viticultural possibilities that we have in the region allow us to produce a wide range of wines. So, these very nice rosés, these superb reds, even white wines, and not only dry wines, but also fantastic sweet white wines from Muscat.
Oh, really? Yes. Oh, yes, I did see a Muscat. Muscatel, I think it was.
Muscatel.
And so what is the deal? What grapes are they allowed to grow in Navarra?
So the grapes, we have around 12 grapes allowed now to grow in Navarra. The most popular and the most planted are for reds are Tempranillo Grenache, and then some Cabernet Merlot. And for whites are Chardonnay, Viura, and now we are introducing also Sauvignon Blanc.
Aha, Sauvignon Blanc. Interesting. Don't you think maybe there's too much Sauvignon Blanc out there? I mean, what made you decide, or why did Navarra decide, oh, you know what, we're going to go with Sauvignon Blanc?
No, in fact, we decided, in fact, producers started planting Sauvignon Blanc and in several years, but we discovered that there was really a potential to produce this kind of grape because of our latitude. Mm-hmm. We have a milder climate than in other regions, you know, like Reda, so we are most capable to produce more acidic and more fruity,
fruit friendly,
and floral wines than in other regions. Mm-hmm. So that's
all right. Okay, great. Well, so one more question. What about the price? How does the price of the wines of Navarra?
That's another reason for consumers to get an interest in Navarra wines, because our wines has a really nice relation. I mean, they are always be able to find something available. Mm-hmm. I mean, with medium or low prices.
Right.
With a very high quality.
Good quality, good, what is it, the word? It's value for money.
Value for money. That's right. Value for money. Value for money wins.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jordi, for taking the time to have a chat. And look forward to more wines of Navarra.
That's right. Hasta pronto.
Hasta pronto. Thank you.
Okay. And that's it for this edition of the Wine Sleuths podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It was quite fun. It's always fun talking to the winemakers to see what they think and their interpretations of the grape and winemaking in general. A big thanks to the winery Grace Wine of Japan and the winemaker there, Ayana Misawa. Also to Bodegas Bilbaínas winemaker Diego Pena Navarro. And lastly, to the Wines of Nevada Consul General, Jordi Vidal. Big thanks to all of them for taking the time to talk with me about their wines and their wine regions. So that's it for this time around. I hope to see you again. Any comments, questions, etc., drop me a line. It's denise@thewinesleuth.co.uk. And the Wine Sleuth is Denise Medrano, and I'm based in London, England.